Okay, I'm Rabbi Pini Rosenthal. For those who do not know me, Rabbi Wiles is in Florida. He'll be back this Shabbos, and he'll be teaching next week as well. So I get the honor and the pleasure to learn with you guys. And what I'm going to do is I'm just jumping in and continuing with curriculum, and I'm going to take the ball down the field a little more, and then you'll pick it up for Shabbos number four, just Shabbos number three, for those who are counting. Okay, so if you want to get a helicopter view of what Shabbos is, sort of, there are four dominant themes, and I made four little things, okay? And there are two themes from the Torah, does anybody know where the source of those two themes are? Where in the Torah is it specific? It's a very famous place. Ten Commandments, correct. So the Ten Commandments given in the book of Exodus, Shemot, it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbos L'Kadosho, remember the Shabbos day to keep it holy. Okay? And then when Moshe repeats it, he has a different, slightly different word. He has word Shamor, guard or keep. Okay? So the quest, there's a whole question of why is there a change? It's a good question. But basically, those represent the two themes of Shabbos. You guys did this, so I'm just going to ask it by way of question. What action does the word Zachor call upon every Jew to do? And I'll give you a hint. It's Friday night. Nope. Good guess. Not from the. By the way, lighting Shabbos candles is not a biblical obligation. There was a time in Jewish history they did not light Shabbos candles. Okay, remember, there's a Torah level. You guys learned earlier Zero Double Wiles, the Torah level, and then there's a rabbinic overlay. Shabbos is evolving. Shabbos, the complexion of Shabbos, if you would go in, if you had a time machine, it would actually look kind of different. The core spirit of Shabbos is eternal. Different expressions, and I'll get to that in a moment, change from time to time. So what is the obligation Friday night, which is an expression of Zachor, remember, or a better thing is keep focus, or if you want to have a sports analogy, have a game face upon Shabbos day to keep it holy.
Kiddush?
Kiddush is correct. For 200 points in the square, very good. Okay, because what is Kiddush, if you had to explain Kiddush, for a person who has an attention span of 8 seconds, what is the purpose of Kiddush? To articulate the mission of the day. And what is the mission of the day? We're going to focus on God as creator, God or his involvement in Jewish history. That's 12 seconds. Most people do not have any more attention span than that. That's it. They're done. Okay, so that's it. So that's Shabbos is keeping focus. Now, an expansion of that is to keep keep Shabbos, keep the focus on Shabbos spirit, even when there's a custom in daily davening that we say, we end the daily prayer, we say a psalm of the day that they did in the temple. We say Hayom Yom, the Shabbat, the fourth day of Shabbat. We're always referencing Shabbos. Shabbos is the pinnacle. We're trying to get there. We're working our way there. Today's Wednesday. I see it from a distance. It's coming on in. All right. So that is Zachor. Next, Shamor, which Rabbi Wiles will deal with more extensively, is guard, keep. What is expressed through what? How do you keep Shabbos? How do you keep Shabbos? What's the primary expression of keeping Shabbos? Abstaining from creative work. The 39 categories of malacha. Okay? In other words, to very simply, again, 8-second summary. 6 days a week you focus on your agenda. 1 day a week we focus on God's malacha, God's work, and his agenda. That's the basic point. Okay? Our work, his work. So that's what Shamor is all about. Now, why do the rabbis make laws? You guys did this earlier this year with Rabbi Wiles. What's one of the motivations of the law? And why would they make it by Shabbos? They made a whole overlay, which we're going to talk about tonight. Some you've already done, some you've not done. Why do the rabbis, even the time of the prophets, particularly Isaiah, about 150 years before the destruction of the first temple, why do they make these laws? In other words, if Shabbos is Zachor and Shamor, you're done. If God made it, that would be a pretty good design, so why do we have to add to it?
To help you keep it.
What?
To help you keep it.
Exactly. In other words, because if we would observe a Shabbos, a biblical Shabbos, could you walk around all Shabbos in sweats and a t-shirt?
Yes.
Yes, you could. Do you have to have any particular meals?
No.
Do you have to make kiddush with wine?
No.
No, you just have to make a declaration. Do you have to take a shower for the Shabbos?
Nope.
No. Okay, could you tell a non-Jew to do everything you want to be done? Yes. So basically, it would look like what, for all intents and purposes? A weekday. So basically, in other words, if a person is appreciates Shabbos, they don't need any legislation. They're naturally going to do that. But the rabbi saw Shabbos is basically a definitive activity of a Jew. That makes the Jew. It embodies all the core principles of Judaism itself. So therefore, to keep focus on that, they created a series of legislation that accrued over the centuries. And the two main ones that Isaiah, in the time of Isaiah, brought in was kavod, which means honor, and oneg, which is to enjoy enjoyment and celebrate. You guys did with Ray Wiles a little bit. What's the kavod? You did kavod with Ray Wiles last week. What is kavod? Respect. Well, I wrote a little definition down, and we'll put some expressions to it. Demonstrate the superiority of the Shabbos day in your living environment and attitude. So therefore, what do you do? What do you do to demonstrate respect?
You prepare for it.
You prepare for it. And specifically what? What does it mean to prepare for Shabbos?
Not do everything in cooking, get ready.
All right, so the meals are taken care of. The house is cleaned up. The bed is made. The pile of laundry, you put it away.
It's under the bed.
Or whatever you put it away is. But in other words, because bottom line, you're inviting a very special guest, akin to a president, a prime minister, a queen, or a king. We call it Shabbos. The same mentality. If an entourage of a king or a prime minister or a president was coming in an hour, your house would look like what? It would look like a museum. It would look gorgeous. As gorgeous as it could be. That is the gold standard for Shabbos. You look great. You've taken a shower. If you're a woman, you have makeup on. Not that anyone needs makeup, but you know. But you look the best. You're wearing your best clothes. Okay, the table is set. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a very interesting phrase. He says, when I came to America in 1932, I did see people who kept Shabbos. Shomrei Shabbos, Shabbos keepers. But I did not see in America an Erev Shabbos Jew. What's an Erev Shabbos Jew?
One that prepares for it.
He's preparing for it, but it's also a person who is not, in other words, a non-Erev Shabbos Jew is basically pulling it and trying to do the totality of preparation for Shabbos in 63 seconds. But a person is he's done it in a somewhat calm way, and therefore is getting to the Shabbos to be able to appreciate the spiritual caliber of the day. In other words, the person is not filled with anxiety, not yelling at anybody, is calm, is transitioned from the world, the malacha of craft, of my job, to menucha. That takes a that's not 5 seconds. It's not 5 seconds. So it's a gold standard. Not only that, then you're not running into Shabbos, you have already transitioned, and then when Shabbos shows up, you're in a new state. The idea of Kabbalat Shabbat, Rabbi Royals may have mentioned this, which was really articulated by the rabbis in Sfat, the mystical rabbis of Sfat. There were pre-day that was Rabbi Kiva. What did Rabbi Kiva used to do? Anybody know? I don't know if he mentioned this. Rabbi Kiva would bring his students. Rabbi Kiva is existing in the time after the destruction of the temple through the Bar Kokhba revolt. He's with his. It says that he gathered all the students. They'd be ready for Shabbos. They'd be wrapped in a talus, covered over the talus. Basically, because you're covering over your head is the idea of humility, and just appreciate when you're in God's presence. That's the gold. That's a gold standard. We're not there yet, but you know, I'm just giving you the lofty peak. In other words, you're already in the mental state of Shabbos beforehand. Most people are lucky to sort of scroll in there and get everything kind of done, filled with anxiety. You're still dripping wet when Shabbos begins. You're lighting the candles, etc. Okay? That's Kavod Shabbos. So therefore, your place is gorgeous. You're gorgeous. The table is set. Your house is set. Everything in preparation shows the superiority of the day. That's Kavod Shabbos. We also talk about Oneg Shabbos. What is Oneg Shabbos?
To enjoy it.
To enjoy it. Specifically in what manner?
With alcohol.
With alcohol. Alcohol is a nice component, but it's not the prime element. There's a foundational delivery system that includes this. So everybody turn to page 5 of your handout, and we're going to pick it up where Rabbi Wiles left off. Okay, that was my little intro. Okay?
Can you pass
some more around, please? Sure. Those lame. Page 5 in your handout. Page 5. You need one? I got one. We got extra.
Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So, let's go to paragraph... Okay. The main expression... I'm sorry. Okay. Hold on. I'm sorry. Page 4. Page 4. Well, let's read in the bottom, number 7. I'd like to read the paragraph on the bottom of page 7, the way bottom. Give us a packet. Go ahead. Would you like to read? All right.
I'll do it.
Go ahead, Mike.
When history began?
It says, what is meant by, in the second section. Good point. There's two pages forward, which is obviously very confusing. It's called, it says, Onik Shabbos. This is the last page 4 in the booklet.
Last page 4?
Oh.
Acha!
All right.
Last
page.
Okay.
All right.
Soup.
Okay.
What is meant by Sabbath delight? This refers to our sage's statement that a person must prepare a particularly sumptuous dish and a pleasantly flavored beverage for the Sabbath. All of this must be done within the context of a person's financial status.
Okay, stop right there. So bottom line, on Sabbath, you must have your best food, richest, most delicious food. Now, it's all subjective, what you enjoy. So if you're vegetarian, that means one thing. If you're a meatitarian, that means something completely else. Okay?
The more one spends both financially in expenses undertaken for the Sabbath and in effort in the preparation of many good foods, the more praiseworthy it is. If, however, this is not within one's financial capacity, even if one merely stews food or the like in honor of the Sabbath, this is considered to be Sabbath delight.
Right. So, by the way, what people get confused on Shabbos is that it's about eating a lot of food. You see clearly, it's not about, Onik Shabbos is not about eating quantity food. It's having what? High quality food. And not eating tons of it. Now, the problem is that when you have, you go to, anybody been to a Shabbos meal where there's like, the table is filled, groaning with a selection. It's very hard, so that Onik Shabbos, to have it, but not to overeat. Because you don't, people say you don't gain weight on Shabbos. The answer is you only gain weight on Shabbos. That's the reality. Okay, moving right along, we turn to page 5. We're going to skip through. You did this very well already. Now,
average person eats 6,000 calories.
6,200 calories, if I saw it on Facebook, so it has to be true. So some nutritionist did a thing, they counted the calories of a reasonable eating of Shabbos, came to 6,200 calories. As you know, for an average man, it should be around 2,500 calories. For a woman, something like closer to 22 or 2,000. So,
for
yeah.
The whole day, not one.
For 25 hours. For the three, okay. the three from the Shabbos candles were out, lit, till Abdullah, it was 6,200 calories.
In there.
Okay, moving right along.
There's so much sugar in there.
Right, because like how many of you is only able to have only one slice of challah?
Yeah, right.
Right. You're that stuff is awesome. Okay. Right. All right. Moving right along. Okay. Now we get to halakha number 9. Mike, you're doing such a great job. Keep on going, my friend.
A person is obligated to eat 3 meals on the Sabbath: one in the evening, one in the morning, and one in the afternoon. One should be extremely careful regarding these 3 meals, not to eat any less. Even a poor man who derives his livelihood from charity should eat 3 meals on the Sabbath.
Okay. So let's talk about that. So basically, so what did the rabbis do? They established that to ensure that there is a delightful thing, that you do not skimp on meals. Sometimes you get very busy. Some people like this. They skip meals. You know, you're working on a project. You're just like a little snack here and there. You're not having meals. Here you have 3 formal, high-quality meals. One Friday night, one ideally Shabbos morning, and one Shabbos afternoon toward the end of Shabbos. Okay, question.
It's kind of funny, there's no stipulation on how many people to eat with. So conceivably you could fulfill this by yourself.
Yes.
That's like so cool.
Yes, you have an obligation to have 3 meals. Most people will do it with their family and with friends. Obviously, there's a big component of socializing on Shabbos. Part of this really all, it's also part of Onik, part of the enjoyment of Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Okay?
So but festival.
It's just
what?
You have to regard it as like a festival.
It's interesting. That's an excellent question. Is Shabbos a chag? What's in between Shabbat and Yom Tov? Like the holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. are chagim.
Shabbos takes priority over
them. Shabbos is superior in status, but they're different. How? What's one of the major distinctions?
No moon.
Weren't they
on Yom Tov you can cook. Shabbat you may not cook. Correct. On Shabbos we have Oneg Shabbos. Oneg is enjoyment. On the Chagim it's Simcha, rejoicing. It's the next step up. Here it's really enjoying food to put you in a relaxed state. Yom Tov is really really like a festival. Mm-hmm. Shabbos is not a festival. You know what I'm saying? There's a specific, in other words, in the time in temple times, the entire Jewish people would get together in Jerusalem. It was a really mega party. The entire Jewish people would get together in Jerusalem. Even in the time of the Second Temple, the time of Herod's temple, the size of Jerusalem would quadruple. All right, so you had literally millions of Jews coming from all corners of Israel and beyond to celebrate in the precinct, in the campus of the temple, and in Jerusalem in general. That's a different kind of part. It's like has much more of a party element. Okay, there's a mitzvah too. There's a, at least according to Maimonides, and certainly time of the temple, to eat meat, unless you're, you know, you don't, can't tolerate it, and drink wine. Meat and wine is what on Shabbos? It's nice as an enhancement, but not a requirement. But because on Shabbos there's no mitzvah of simcha. What is simcha versus oneg? How would you describe it? So oneg is sort of enjoyment, putting yourself in a chill, relaxed state. You know what I'm saying? You're not hungry. You had good food. You feel good. Simcha is a positive state. You're anxiety free, and you're in a state of celebration. It's a positive engagement versus Shabbat, more of a removal of a all negative vibes. You know, it's like a quiet positive. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit of a and the socialization is a major component. The Jewish people getting together as one, and ideally. So it's a national celebration versus a private enjoyment. Okay. Okay, we're going to get to that momentarily. All right, keep on going.
Nevertheless, a person who is sick from overeating or one who fasts constantly is not obligated to partake of three meals. All these three meals must be significant sittings at which wine is served at each. One must break bread on two full loaves. The same applies regarding the holidays.
Okay, so let's get to some of the mechanics here. So every, according to Maimonides, all three meals must have what they call lechem mishnah, two loaves of bread. Other people argue about just the third meal, the shalosh, the third meal to require bread. Let's get some basic procedure. What is a basic procedure, let's say Friday night? You start off with a glass of wine. What are the requirements of the glass or the cup? It should be full, it should be clean, it should be permanent, ideally. You should ideally not use a throwaway plastic cup, okay? And then you make the vayichulu, you make the blessing of the on the wine itself, bravery guffin, and then you make the Kiddush declaration, and you drink it, and you share it. Boom. Everybody washes their hands, and then you make, now why is the challah covered?
So it doesn't get jealous.
Okay. Okay, guys, because nursery's going to be, okay, what's up with that? Okay, so let me. I knew you guys. I was set up. I knew you guys would say that. Okay, there is one of the commentaries on the Talmud is the Tosfos and uses a poetic thing that we cover the challah so we'll not get embarrassed. Okay, so obviously challahs don't have feelings. At least mine don't.
No, but it's so holy.
Okay, so let me explain that. Actually, it's really expressing a halachic problem because really. If you have two mitzvot and you pass over one mitzvah, in a certain sense, you are dissing the other. Yeah. So therefore, by covering the challah, you're not, you know, it's like, or some people are more strict, you don't even have the challah on the table, according to some. So you do the kiddush first, and then you do the challah. But if the challahs are there, it's sort of like I'm saying, like, this is another mitzvah, I'm now going to take this mitzvah and ignore this other mitzvah. So there's a sort of a degrading of it. So the poetic way of saying it, so it won't be embarrassed because it's being passed over. But that's a poetic phrase. Obviously, she does not believe that challahs have feelings. They're very sensitive challahs. You got to be careful with your challahs, you know. Okay. But all right, everybody knows that one.
Feelings.
What?
My challahs have feelings. They talk to me all the time. They say, cover me.
Cover me. Right, they're embarrassed also. I'm a little exposed. Right, I'm exposed. Yeah, Dan.
It says two loaves. I see people use a challah roll.
Yes.
So is a challah roll considered a loaf? Yes.
Okay, first of all, what is the requirement for the bread? Do I have to use the traditional challah? challah?
No, it has to be a kazayas, but not, I don't know the English phrase on
it. Right. It could be any kind of bread. It could be a bagel. It could be a roll. It could be a pita. It could be any complete unit of bread. It doesn't mean literally a loaf. You know what I mean?
It's just bread.
It's bread. It has to be a complete thing. What?
We can use a pizza.
If it's... the pizza, the question is not really... since you put stuff on it, might not become fully as bread. But you could have bread with some, like, you know, some spices and herbs in it. People have that, you know, like a little rosemary, you know, like a little... There's all kinds of breads, focaccia kind of bread, whatever.
No, it doesn't have to be bread that has been cooked.
Baked.
It's kosher, baked as kosher bread.
Yeah, that I was assuming that. We're, yeah, you do not want to, you do not want to avoid eating non-kosher for your left, for your for bread.
No,
so
what is halal
bread when the person has licked the whatever in making the bread, right?
Oh, that's a pas Israel. Okay, that's a whole question of kosher. That's true. That's a whole actually complicated halakhic area. I just want to sidestep for a moment. Let's assume kosher bread, kosher which has a good certification. Make it very simple. I don't want to get into the issues of what makes bread kosher. But what I want to make sure is that you don't have to have challah. People are looking like, you have to have the challah with a shiny, you know, twisted braided bread. I like challah, but you don't have to have it. If you want to have two bagels, that works. Two Kaiser rolls, that's good. Two pizzas.
One more question.
Though. Yes.
What I'm getting at is, though, you know, if you see this like really nice artisanal looking bread from the farmer's market, I could use that?
If it's kosher,
it has a thing on it that says it's kosher.
That's it. Fine. That's it. Kosher bread, that's fine.
If you don't have wine, what else can you make kiddush?
Okay, so that's an excellent question. So interesting, a Friday night you can make kiddush on the bread. If you don't, what you would do is let's say if you didn't have wine, well then if you don't have wine, you can also make it on beer.
Right. What do you say?
Well, beer, you make a shakel on the beer, and then you make the kiddush. But if you have no beer or grape juice or wine or anything, then you only have the two loaves of bread. You make the, you wash your hands for the bread, you say the vayichulu, you say hamotzi lechem and arad, and you make the kiddush, and then you slice up the bread and distribute.
Beer on a Friday night?
If you don't have wine. We're talking about if you don't, it's not ideal, you should have wine. Okay?
Why? So where did we get this challah?
What's up with the challah thing?
Yeah.
Okay, so,
Sarah.
Good question. So, in order to have a meal in Judaism is that, what's the foundational staple that makes a meal?
Grain,
but bread. In the Western world, a staple, the primary staple of a meal is bread. Any good meal has bread. You go to a fine dining establishment, what do they first bring you? Bread. Right? And then they'll fill you up. So then when you get your small, your overpriced small quantity of main meal, you don't feel so bad because you can't eat anyway because you've already had 13 slices of bread. That's the strategy. So the foundation of every meal is bread. The question is, why do I have to have two loaves? Anybody know what that is? Why two loaves of bread? One loaf, because every other meal...
Double portion of that.
Right, so it reflects the concept of when Shabbat was introduced. The Jews left Egypt. They had not yet got to Sinai. They had like a mini Shabbos. Basically two or three rules. You gather the man every day. Friday, you get a double portion, and on Shabbos, you don't leave the camp environment, and you don't gather. That was it. A two-rule Shabbos. Question: were the Jews able to keep their first two-rule Shabbos? And that would be no. They were not able to keep the two-rule Shabbos on the very first Shabbos. The third time, they did a little better. They were a little rallied on that one. Yes?
So if you have a much smaller meal, and you don't finish challah...
You don't have to have... Go back to you. You only have to have a slice... You only have to have an ounce of bread.
So it's okay to make a hamotzi over challah and then, like, reserve it later for the rest of it.
But if you cut it, though, you can't use it...
Well, you need to have a whole loaf.
You can't use it.
That's what I'm saying.
But you can supplement the bread basket with the sliced challah you made that you had the Friday night before, the night before. You can use that bread again.
You just can't.
But you have to make hamotzi and new challah. It's just
you have to make. You have to make. You have to make. You have to make hamotzi on two complete loaves. That's what they have. What they call challah rolls. Typically, price point around 50-60 cents a piece. So if you're really not into the bread thing, you're not trying to low on the carbs. You just have to have little challah rolls. That's it. You don't have to have, you know, these megatunal Hasidic wedding size challahs there, you know what I mean? Like, it's that could, you know, here's the submarine challah, let's slice this. Okay, so why? Jenny's right, you have two slices, you have challah, two portions to reflect the double portion God gave the Jewish people, a double portion, so they can enjoy Shabbos. They got one for Friday and one that they would enjoy on the Shabbos day, so they didn't have to go out. They can basically focus on being educated by Moshe Rabbeinu. That was their Shabbos, it was all about, in their proto-Shabbos. Is that clear? So everything about Motzi. The tradition is to have salt on the table, at least, and to put people put salt on it. You don't have to. If you want, it should be, you make the blessing when the bread is in its best form, so if you want to use tchina, you want to use hummus, that's also fine. Salt being on the table reflects the idea that the ideal that the Jewish food, the Jewish table reflects the altar in the temple, which has salt. It's a reason why people have salt. But if you don't have salt and your bread is flavorful, it's not a problem.
What's the scoring thing again? Like, what? How do you score the bread right before?
So that's a good question. It's a custom because you want to like go make the brach and go right into the mitzvah. So like you score the things you can just.
So excited to make this mitzvah.
Yeah, you go, there's no delay. It's like you make the bracha, you go into the mitzvah. That's what I think the reason is. It's not, again, it's not a absolute necessity, but you will see that happen. What else?
Why the salt on the challah?
You know, the salt on the challah is because the bread must be in its best state. So therefore, their bread at their time was rather bland. But if you have nice flavorful bread, or certainly that has bread that has like some sort of stuff on the. Spices on top are built in. You don't have to do that. You know, certainly, for example, people on Rosh Hashanah through the entire circle here use honey. You don't have to. It should be, the bread should be flavored in its ideal state. I happen to use tchina. I'm not really the salt guy. I have the salt on the table as well, but you know, go either way. All right. Key thing I want to show up, I want to get to the three meal thing. In other words, people are not rigorous about that. The Ram was actually very rigorous. He actually held, you had the night meal, morning meal, and afternoon meal. Rishonim,
breakfast?
What?
Like breakfast?
Yeah, so his Shabbos was, they daven, in other words, in his schedule, they'd have an earlier davening, not an MG 9:30, strolling at 10, finish around 1, and hit your meal at 1:30 kind of thing. They'd be done at around 9:30. They would have their, what they call breakfast. That's why Sephardim have, you go to many Sephardic communities, their second meal was often dairy, because they would daven early. They'd come home, they'd have berekas, they'd have bread, and they have dairy and fish kind of based, what you call a brunch. And then they would, and then later on, their third meal would be meat, which they'd have about 2 o'clock, 2, 3 o'clock. So they have all, so each quadrant, the night would have a meal, the morning would have a meal, the afternoon would have a meal. Often this, in the winter time, it's kind of hard to do that if you're going to a regular shul, which starts at 9 or 9:30, because by the time you show up, you've missed the morning.
And then you have to rush.
So according to Rambam, you can have three meals at Shabbos because you missed the time zone of the meal. Other people might take, you just have to have what? Three meals. So let's say you were sick Friday night, you'd have to have three meals over the course of Shabbos day. You got to hit the three meals. According to Rambam, if you missed the time, that's it. Done.
Okay, question.
Yes.
Shoshodis.
Yes.
It's considered third meal.
Yes, it is.
But it said here that you have to have Kiddush, but you don't do Kiddush before you do Shoshana.
Okay, so excellent point. So the Ram is unique that you have to have wine. You have to have the wine has to be opens the meal for Friday night, opens the meal for the Shabbos day, and he actually had a requirement of having a wine at the third meal because what? It's a quality of fine dining. So what's fine dining without wine? Not fine dining. That's what I say. So he maintained you have to have wine all three meals. The other authorities brought down the shulam does not require that. But it's a nice thing to do. Okay?
Can I?
Yes.
So we eat bread and that's the hamotzi, but yes. Why is it challah bread?
That's just because the Jews in Europe, first of all, that's only true for European Jews. Sephardim never had challah bread because they had more of like a pita lafa thing going on there. It's because we're from Ashkenaz, that's what they developed, and probably it's not even Jewish. Probably is that was the breads of Europe that they had. Those are the nice breads of Europe. Challah is not really, I'm sure if you Wikipedia it, you find that it's probably like Danish or something like that. But there's no obligation to have bread, a high egg-based dough, you know, what we call a challah thing. That's just because most Jews in America are Ashkenazic. We brought our cuisine from Europe, thing like cholent. Are you going to find cholent in the Talmud? No. You're going to find that there's an idea of having chamim, hot food that you'd slow cook over the duration of Shabbat, but it wasn't cholent. But that's how Ashkenazim did that. But if you went to Sephardic regions, they didn't have any of this stuff.
No, they have cholent. It was just very different.
Right, it's a different, right. It is a stew kind of thing, but it's a different vibe. You know what I mean? It's spicy. It's got eggs in it. You can all kinds of stuff going on there.
If people have allergies to bread or
then you don't know. Then you don't know. Remember, what is Oneg? Actually, Michael just read it. If you're sick, so if you let's say you overate. Have you ever had a situation you just finished the second meal and then comes the third meal? So are you have to have a third meal? No, because Oneg has to be a delight. It's not a delight, it's disgusting.
You've just
packed in 5,000 calories. You're rolling off the couch and they say, hey guys, it's all shoes. You said, all right, you're going to projectile vomit if you have another food. So basically you have to, but so the Shulchan Aruch says once you try to plan it out that you don't overeat in the second meal so you'll have some room in the third meal. But if you're allergic, you don't have anything. I know people that don't have challah ever because they're, they have all kinds of...
You never say yes. Mozi and you never bench.
Nope.
Wow.
So you're really...
Health is... the only thing they have to do that is to have... So I know a person who is gluten intolerant and they can't have certain kind of thing. They only have a bread-like substance is matzah because they have to have that. And they have an oat or rye matzah and they have the smallest quantity because they have their, sense. Obviously, you're going to get violently sick and you don't even have that. Health is first. Kuach nefesh has knocked everything out. Okay. Yes.
So if you don't have bread, so if you're like gluten intolerant and you don't have bread, so you don't wash and you don't.
Well, if you have to have. Aren't there bread gluten? Can there be a wheat product which is gluten free?
Just in a hypothetical universe, you can't have any form of this fake bread or whatever. I was just wondering.
No, they don't
do
it.
Have that,
no.
Like, what
nope.
Do you do?
You never wash and you never bench, and that's it. That's the only thing you can do about that.
What about
your health comes first? What?
Have, like, to just fulfill the third meal, having like the smallest piece of challah so that you can say them okay, and then you can bench.
Okay.
Is that a little bit silly though? To sort of you're sort of fulfilling the mitzvah to rack up a mitzvah, but you're not having any oneg about it.
Right.
You're just having like an olive-sized piece of challah.
Right.
So that
just
you
to fulfill the mitzvah.
Extra blessing.
Okay.
A little bit. But...
Okay, that's an excellent question, but it's
Couldn't you say it's a token of appreciation?
You could say that.
But you're doing it because you have to. It's not the same. It's not the same thing. It doesn't have the same meaning if you're doing it because you have to do it.
Right.
Well, it's been hard. Is the guy like, if he's going to eat like he's going to be, like it's like he's just, it feels gross? In other words, he's not really that hungry. He can eat, but he's not hungry. Yeah, so to have a small amount because he's having the three meals. Because having the three meals is also showing the superiority of the day. Remember, like, in other words, if a guy who's really poor and all he can have is boiled vegetables, that's all that he can muster. So it's still, that is his showing the superiority of the day, because within his financial capacity, that's the best he's got. So having the third meal, even if you're not wildly hungry, is definitely better than nothing.
I once had a nice idea that the third meal is actually like the only meal that's actually for Hashem, because we're all so full, so you're no longer eating for yourself. You're actually eating because it is a mitzvah, and it's bringing Hashem.
And that's how you get.
Well, all right. So I mean, the bottom line. Before we get very transcendent, let me ask you another question, which ironically Rabbi Wallace did not bring down. What other activity? And I'll put it for married people is also Oneg Shabbos.
Oh, we know.
So sex. So before we get transcendent, all right. I'm just going to be no. The bottom line is it's really the three meals is for physical pleasure, physical enjoyment to remove you and it's put you in a relaxed state. That's the goal. So therefore, food and drink. And for married people, sexual relations. So, but now, by the way, that is celebrating Shabbos. So we don't have this division of, like, removing ourselves from physicality is something which is intrinsically not able to be elevated to holiness. So let's go on to the paragraph number 10, and then I want to get to some other stuff. Mike, you're doing a great job. Keep on going.
Eating meat and drinking wine on the Sabbath is a form of pleasure for a person, provided this is within his financial capacity. On the Sabbaths and holidays, a significant meal at which wine will be served is forbidden to be scheduled for the time the house of study is in session. Instead, the practice of the righteous of the former generations would be as follows. A person would recite the morning service and the additional service in the synagogue. Afterwards, he would return home and partake of the second Sabbath meal. He would then proceed to the house of study to read from the written law and to study the oral law until the afternoon, at which time he would recite the afternoon service. He would then partake of the third Sabbath meal, a significant sitting at which wine is served, and continue eating and drinking until the Sabbath passed.
Right. A key element here is to notice what is the afternoon activity according to the Rambam of the righteous?
Study.
Learning Torah. Really, and this is something which is very important. Most people, everybody here, myself included, during the whole week, we work hard. And Shabbos has to be viewed as being the opportunity of a, the way to view it as basically being as a spiritual seminar. In other words, or a spiritual retreat. You go, let's say I go to a conference, and you go to a, or a spiritual retreat. You'll go off to 3 days over a weekend, and you'll learn different ideas, and you might have meditation, whatever it is. But the bottom line is, Shabbos has to be that sanctuary in your week, which is an opportunity for growth. So if a person would just eat and then roll over into bed and be catatonic until Havdalah time, they miss the opportunity. You have to view it as every Shabbos is an opportunity. And if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. The question is, what is my plan to have moments of growth for the Shabbos? Do I have a study partner? Am I going to set up time to look at the Parsha? Am I going to come to a class? Am I going to hear a sermon? Am I going to? If I don't have a plan, because the default setting often is sleeping.
So
okay.
Shabbos night?
What?
Yeah.
No, he's not saying. No, no. Everything. Rocket guys. Hold on. Deep breath. Cleansing breath. Yes, there is time for a Shabbos nap. It's just that you don't want the totality being eating, sleeping.
Because that's like for Thanksgiving.
So I'm saying that's not really what a Shabbos. No, again, you're not gonna knock. That will happen. There will be some Shabbatot, but that's gonna happen. I'm telling you right now. But if you want, the goal is that you at least have some locked in time, which will be moments of growth. Now, each person, from one person is 10 minutes. That's fine. Each person has to be realistic of where they're at. But you want to, in other words, the answer you want to start fostering is, you don't want to waste a Shabbos. Think about it like that. Shabbos, you don't want to waste a Shabbos. In other words, you look back at your Shabbos, it's Saturday night, you're looking back at your Shabbos, well, what was the takeaway? Did I grow a little bit? Did I learn some new things? Did I have some new insights, personal insights? Did I grow from the Shabbos? Because the rest of the week is not a growth-oriented time. You're in the war of life. You're in the office. They're hocking you around. You're in meetings. You're emailing. You're dealing with all kinds of people, the good, the bad, the ugly. It's not natural to real development. Shabbos is your time. You gotta take advantage. You gotta take control of your Shabboses. So because the food is not the good in its own right, it's to create a state where you're now open. You're anxious free. You're chillaxed. That post meal, like, you're not overstuffed, but you're in that sweet zone right there. And you can have serious conversations about substantive things. There is, again, part of owning Shabbos is schmoozing. But you don't want to have 10 hours of schmoozing, because that will be, and that it's hard to, you got to be strategic about that. Because there are certain people that are your friends, your girlfriend, who she's an epic schmoozer. So you're going to be in a room with her. You're going to have chips, schmoozing, 10 hours, done. You want to be strategic about having certain quantity of schmoozing, certain quantity of food, certain quantity of sleeping, and certain quantity of growth. You want to be strategic about that. People just let Shabbos happen, and then it's hit or miss. And they say, oh, that was a great Shabbos. Well, you can plan this.
Well, isn't that why they do the few minutes at the table to do a little bit of growth instead?
To our Torah?
Yeah, instead of having to, so that way people can still maintain relaxedness, because Shabbos in its own self could be stressful in its ways, because you have to be at a certain level, have things at a certain way after the preparations.
100%.
So it's hard to get yourself in the mood to learn something new versus just to review what's
correct. Right. I agree with you 100%. That's why the institution, what you call what Yaniv brought up, is the issue of having a Devar Torah. A person, there's a custom to bring in Devar Torah. To sort of add that, to build it in. But you know what the best kind of Torah at the table is? The one that's organic. Somebody raises a question that really bothers them, and there's a conversation. The Devar Torah, the official Devar Torah will not be said, is a little bit contrived, it's a little bit of second best. The best one is where terror actually happens. It's natural. It's spontaneous. It's real. It's thoughtful. It's provocative. You know what I'm saying? That's the best. That's, you know what I mean? You know it when you see it. Now you can't, you know what I'm saying? But again, I'm all for the Dvar Torah, but really know that that's the gold medal. That's the silver medal. The gold medal is the spontaneous Torah. That's the best quality.
Does it also fall under the responsibility of the Rav of the Shul to like create that form of like, you know, where when they throw a question out to the community, people
yeah.
won't answer it later?
Yeah.
How much later to create that kind of argument?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. For example, in the synagogue that I go to, the rabbi on Friday night, he asks a question with no answer. He asks a question about the parsha without giving an answer. So you guys discuss it and give me an answer. I was curious about this. What do you guys think? That's a great idea. There are a lot of resources, you know, online to do just that, to improve the quality of a Shabbos table. All right, let's keep on rocking and rolling. Okay, so those are the meals. Let's turn to page. Six, okay. All right. I think another lovely custom is to add the quality of, is releasing Zmirot. Why does Zmirot come into, Yaniv, another variation of what you're saying is really the thing of singing songs. What are Zmirot? They're Shabbat songs. They're songs whose content is of things which are really different themes of Shabbos, which are then sung, and there are a lot of melodies to those. And that was developed because for some people are more, let's say, intellectually oriented, discussion oriented. Some people get more connect via music. So the best is both. All right. So that's the deal. Let's look through our little checklist over here. Anything 1 through 12. I'm going to get to Avdola shortly. Okay. We basically do this preparing for Shabbos. Check. All right, do you guys do with Rabbi Wild lighting of the Shabbos candles? Yes, I was here for that. I saw that, yes. Shabbos candles, yes. Friday night service.
Seven.
All right, let's go to seven. Okay, you guys, I'm just going to tell the basics of the Friday night service, just you should know. If you go to a synagogue, and you know, one of the things that want to prepare you, if you walk into any synagogue in the world Friday night, expect three part to the program. You have before sunset is the afternoon service, the weekday service. Basically composed of three parts, an Asherei, the silent devotion, the Amidah, and Aleinu. Then we have Kabbalat Shabbat, which is basically composed of seven chapters of from the Book of Psalms, and then the famous song of L'Chadudi, L'Krat Kala, is the you guys have all experienced that. I don't go into that so deeply. And then we have the afternoon, the evening service, the Ma'ariv service. Okay. You get home. The custom is to sing a Shalom Aleichem. Everybody's familiar with that. Some people do Eishes Chayil. Is it required? No, but it's a nice thing.
What's with the custom of Shalom Aleichem saying each like verse three times?
There's a variety of practices in the Jewish community, and you know, I don't know if there's any specific reason. Just some people do, you know, different families and communities start to develop their own practices, but it's not really binding.
Okay, I just want to ask. I read somewhere on Eshet Chayil. I just want to clarify.
Good.
Hopefully, that doesn't go off topic.
Good.
That the person that composed Eshet Chayil didn't compose it for his wife; he composed it for his mother. Is that true, or is that
okay? So who? Where? Okay, good question. So Eshet Chayil is the last half of chapter 31 of the book of Proverbs, written by King Solomon, good. Okay, so really it's talking about, now the question is, the Eishet Chayil, the woman of valor, is a poetic device using the ultimate woman being the immediate reading, but talking about it being a metaphor for other things as well. And there's a whole list of different things. So it's a multi-tiered poem. Okay, but since it was developed to do that Friday night. Also, many customs you have the thing of the father will bless the children. Who's seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nice thing. Okay.
The mother doesn't bless. Yeah, she does.
I I've not seen that.
Yeah.
I've not seen that. Right. Right. It's a nice thing. Okay. Just you should be aware of what's going on. I want to get to it. Let's keep on going. Page 8, Kiddush Friday night. Do you guys do Kiddush at all? Do you guys discuss Kiddush before? With Rabbi Wilds? No, not at all.
Nope.
What?
My packet doesn't have even pages. Do
you have another? Yes, I do. Full service here. All right. I do. Last one.
Thank you.
It's your lucky day. All right. So these are all nice customs. Again, these transition. Again, what are they? These practices achieve one thing. They're helping transition the psyche from the workday mindset. You ever find that you're Shabbos and you're still thinking about a particular deal or job or issue that's bothering you? It takes not so simple to transition. So these are all things to the song. So really, in a certain sense, it's kind of a hypnotic device to shift out of one state of consciousness to another state of consciousness. That's really what's going on here. Bringing different themes of Shabbos, get you into the Shabbos state of mind, the Menucha state of mind. And it's not so simple. If you're like, and then you're like, you're running up to the edge of Shabbos, you jump in the shower, and you jump into your clothes, and ba-dum! You may be outwardly look like you are ready for Shabbat, but internally you're still out the jump. And therefore, Kabbalah Shabbat, the whole thing is really designed for that, to solve that problem. Some people you'll go into a thing, they even do an additional singing of a psalm you did in Nefesh. They sing that first. And it has a calming, gets people into a certain mindset. Because it's not easy to step into a spiritual state of mind. You need a transition. There's a malacha headspace, workday headspace, and there's a manucha, calm, conflict-free, open, seeking, looking for discovery mentality, and then there's a middle transition thing, and that's not so simple. Often people don't transition at all. You know what I'm saying? In other words, these are tools. Sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. Okay?
What's manucha mean again?
Manucha means... It doesn't have an English word. Manucha could be translated relaxation, but it means is that your mental state of affairs is you're now conflict free. You've now it's like one part conflict free, one part chill. You know what I mean? You're now like relaxed. You're calm. You're open. I can't get that. No, English word that captures the manucha state of mind. It's a state of mind.
I like it.
Okay, so that's the challenge. These are customs that came that developed throughout all the different centuries to achieve that goal. Okay.
I like that.
Okay. Yes. Question.
Where are these? Where's manucha?
It's not mentioned here. Although we're gonna. It's
like Kabbalah
Shabbat. Manucha is one of the objectives of Shabbat.
So well,
it's actually mentioned in the Amidah of the third service of Mincha, because really that's when you're really most likely to achieve it. Sort of like it's like the goal. You know what I'm saying? It's not easy to get there. So therefore, the one thing we do, which is biblically demanded, we mentioned is Kiddush. You guys can do Kiddush with Rabbi Wilds. Okay, so let's. All right. So let's do paragraph. So you see paragraph number one. Page 8. We're on page 8. Who's obligated in Kiddush? Who is obligated from the Torah to say Kiddush?
Boys.
Men and women. Equally. Let's say you have a situation, which in the MG community, not infrequent, you have the woman is far more educated than the man. So who should make the Kiddush?
The woman.
The woman. And not have Stumbled McGee over there, butcher the Kiddush. How the woman make the kiddush, do the job, and fulfill the obligation for the man. By the way, the Talmud has a nice thing that a man is cursed if he has his wife make kiddush. Not because of sex, it's because that means he has not got his level of Jewish education at the level where he can actually do 58 words articulately. That is a low bar which you need to overcome. So I'm happy to do that. So that's basically. A man and a woman should be able to say Kiddush. A woman is alone. She has to make Kiddush. 100%. Okay? It's not a man thing. It's a Jew thing. It's an adult thing. Okay? So we get into the mental state. Again, this first paragraph, we say the first three sentences from the second chapter of Genesis, which focus our mind on the creation. Let's read it out. Paragraph 1 on the bottom there.
It was evening and it was morning. On the sixth day, the heavens and the earth and all their hosts were completed. For by the seventh day, God had completed his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. Then God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it he rested from all his work which God had created to function thenceforth. Blessed art thou.
Okay, stop. So first thing is, why do we? Is that part of the Kiddush intrinsically? The first four or five verses? Is that part of the Kiddush? Is that a requirement? No, that's a custom. The custom was to get into the... In order, the problem is that when you do the same declaration week in, week out, what does it become? A rote, robotic, meaningless thing. So therefore, to help... Now, only thing is that this also becomes rote also. So the problem is there's no way to make a declaration not rote if you're doing a lot. So you actually have to focus your attention on that. So the idea is that you basically focus on God as creator, A, B, and that he created a Shabbos day, which has holiness into it. That was part of the design of the creation. Then we go into thing number two, which is?
Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine.
Right, so you make Kiddush on wine. Now, does that have to be red wine, white wine? The Shulchan Aruch says the wine that you enjoy the most. Okay?
Versus
grape juice? You have grape juice. Grape juice is also wine.
You use for what and what's the day?
For the Kiddush.
Friday night,
both. Both. You can use wine, any kind of wine, and grape juice. Then we have the Kiddush. It's not that it's a very small declaration. Good. Paragraph number three over there.
Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and has been pleased with us, in love and favor has given us his holy Sabbath as a heritage, a memorial of the creation, that day being also the first among the holy festivals. In remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt, thou hast chosen us and hallowed us above all nations, and in love and favor hast given us thy holy Sabbath as a heritage. Blessed art thou, O Lord, who hallowest the Sabbath.
Who makes the Shabbos holy. Okay, so basically there's two major themes. One is that God is, we focus our mind that God is a creator. And two is he took us out of Egypt, the two main themes of God. So basically it's focusing on God. Now, notice how he talks about, this is a very important point, that Hashem was pleased with us and love and favor gave us a holy Shabbos. See, Shabbos is a very interesting thing. Contrast Shabbos and a vacation. They're similar. There are some things which are similar, but it's not. It's completely different. A vacation is simply. It has the same thing. My goal is trying to move myself out of the workday space. By the way, what percent of Americans when they're on work cannot stop thinking about work?
When they're not at work.
When they're on vacation. What percent?
85.
10% say they can't stop thinking about work. How many people answer emails when they're on vacation?
People don't live in Manhattan.
Okay. Okay. What percent of people answer work emails when they're on vacation?
Everybody.
95.
So in America, it's about 65-70%. Okay. Okay. Now, what does that mean? In other words, because for a vacation, one thing is that you've got to be out of the workspace physically. But the next step is that's not the essence of vacation. It's leaving the workspace in your mind. And so you see that 10%, even if they try, they can't. And 70%, if you're answering an email, you're de facto in the office just with better, with more sun. That's basically what's going on there. You're working, you're worried, that's it. Your vacation is, so you have to really, by the way, if you take a vacation, if you want it to be a vacation, the measure of vacation, you're not taking any calls, you're not taking any emails. If you can do that, not everybody has every, but that's a real vacation. If you're not doing that, it's a sort of a bad work, it's a better work, bad vacation situation. You know what I'm saying? It gets to work, gets to go to work in your shorts kind of situation. Shabbos basically deals with three levels of the person. Physically, you have to find food. Psychologically, you're in a relaxed state. And third level, spiritually, you're now focusing on the highest part of a person. So that's why the Talmud talks of Shabbos really what to the Jewish people? a gift. You could not compose yourself. You went on vacation, you're not be able to, you would not do this. It's designed to be able to deal with every level of the personality. The physical, delicious food, delicious wine, nice clothing, nice, beautiful, clean environment. Psychologically, you're in a relaxed state, you're calm. You're not thinking about work. You're really not supposed to talk about work as much as possible. And third, you're talking about spiritual things. You're talking about your own issues, explorations, discoveries, concepts. That's really what the mission. That's a manucha state of mind. Roger.
I've heard a lot of people say that they don't talk about work on Shabbos because specifically, like, whatever you talk about is not going to happen. Now, is that just like a paranoid?
That is a paranoid, superstitious, false belief. Yes, in my estimation. No, the reason why I don't talk about work is because it will kill your Shabbos. And in fact, rabbinically, you're not allowed to talk about you could talk about, technically, you could talk about work in abstraction. Like, I talk about the arbitrage market is composed like this. Real estate in New York, but talking about, we're going to go on Tuesday, we're going to have a meeting, and I'm going to knock down 10% off the price. That is forbidden. You're not allowed to walk out of your garden or to your house and say, yeah, we need to fix this, we've got to do this, we've got to do this, we've got to move that, we've got to move that, move it. You cannot do that. All right? There are certain things that they can't mandate the perfect Shabbos. So they made a couple of speed bumps here and there. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, it'd basically be, again, the person, we are addicted to work. That's the main thing. We're addicted to work. And even non-Jews are starting to realize that it's crazy, and they're having their voluntary digital days, where they're turning off the thing. In other words, they recognize some of the psychological benefits of Shabbos, and they're trying to do it. People are amazed. When I talk about Shabbos to a non-Jew, it's like, you don't really answer your email phone for a whole 25 hours?
My boss asked me that
right.
Yesterday.
Right.
He's like, but do you really care? And I said, well, yeah. He's like, oh, I was just asking. I don't think you would care about...
Right. But there's, you get a whole variety of reactions. That's a little bit shocking to them because people are constantly in front of their phones continuously. You know what I mean? And always looking, you know, got another update perhaps, another text, you know. People are enslaved by the phone. The thing about the phone 15 years ago, you don't have to, oh, I got one text. 35 cents, okay? So then, you know what I mean? That was like, now it's like, you know, yeah, you know, you're you're like it's an entertainment center on your and you're constantly
into a zombie.
Right, exactly.
We have questions.
Questions. Yaniv, you were here first, you guys. All right, whatever.
Let her go first.
Wonderful. Okay.
Thank you. So when you said spiritually,
yes.
I'm a little confused because Rabbi Wild's email the other day last week, he was talking about that as Jews our goal is to make things not spiritual but holy. So
correct.
I'm just wondering when you said that Shabbat inspires us spiritually, because I'm really asking, I'm now not using the word spiritual,
okay,
like people do, and I'm now looking using the word holy.
So fine. The thing is, that's an excellent point, because the word spiritual is like very vague. What does that mean? So okay, you're right. But the verse says, remember the Shabbat day to likadosho, to make it holy. And holy basically means to be that it is governed, it's governed by idea and ideal. It's a principle-based day. And not just of our highest aspirations. But you know, that's kind of spiritual. I mean, it's also spiritual in a sense. But spiritual, like, you know, I don't know, when you say spiritual, you say crystals? I don't know. Well, you know, I don't know. Whatever people think about spiritual. So it's a word that it means so much to some people, it doesn't nearly have a meaning. So I'll go with holiness. I'll go with Kedusha. Yes, Deneve.
Regarding to like discussion, the types of discussions and on Shabbos.
Yep.
I'll just give an example. I belong to a very Taliban-y shul in LA.
Cool.
So like if you discuss like certain secular topics, they'll probably castrate you.
It's a little bit excessive there on the castration there. Okay. So you may want to consider another shul.
Yeah. Should we not like have secular discussions like financial discussions, just like randomly like we hear in the paper or something like that, because if we're meant to keep it within the realms of Shabbos, then maybe we should, then those things need to stay out. No?
Okay, so let me take this stance. We need to crawl before we walk, walk before we run. On ultimate Shabbos, you know, like, you know, on mega ultimate Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the author of the Mishnah, in his hand, they only spoke if it had to do with words of Torah or something which is like pass assault. Anything else, there was no, it was a zero schmooze zone. Okay, that's not required. That's not a level that most people can live on. The Rambam says that person should have that 51%, that his schmoozing should not be, in other words, no ideational content schmoozing, should not be 51% of a Shabbos conversation. In other words, you got 40% schmoozing, but 6% content. So you gotta be realistic. It should not feel like a weekday. Now, and if it's action oriented, then it's actually rabbinically prohibited. In other words, we'll go down there and we'll get that 15% discount. You know, action oriented. We'll negotiate this. We'll do that. That's prohibited rabbinically because it'll kill your Shabbos. Because basically you're at the office already.
Is that why Motzi Shabbos plans are not supposed to be made?
If it has to do with like practically, yes, we're going to go to see American Sniper, the 7:30 showing. We'll meet you there. You know, yeah, very detailed things. But you got one, you know, yes, you should avoid that. Yeah. Okay, but again, I don't want to get so rigorous. The goal is like, everybody's on a different level, and in MG, I think I can identify like 70 levels of different Shabbos, so wherever you are on the Shabbos spectrum, let's don't get crazy here. Let's don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Okay? So listen, the bottom line is, if you're just talking about business, see if you could, a little less, at least the meals, or at least the davening when I'm talking about business. You know what I mean? Everybody here can grow a little bit. The enemy of growing is that if I'm not perfect, I don't want to do it. You know, instead of like exercising three times, if I'm not going to win the marathon, I'm not going to work out. No. You just got to do something. Get moving. Question.
Just a quick question. Yeah. It might be off, but is there anything about live streaming to Shabbat services? Or did you already cover that in the first part?
Live streaming? Well,
okay,
so live streaming, well, a person should not be ideally watch TV or his computer on Shabbat.
Right.
So that, you know. So that's the bottom line. Okay, I'm going to leave it like that. There's a more complicated than that, but that's a basic idea. Because it's the same thing. You're going to use the TV, you're going to change the channel, there's going to be some halachic problems. Okay.
So no Shabbos app, right?
No Shabbos app. It'll ruin your Shabbos. Even if it was theoretically permitted. Basically, the enemy of Shabbos is basically your phone. I mean, as far as mentality. All right. Washing for bread. Is everybody cool? Does everybody know what that is? It says very clear direction in your page. I want to hit all the things here. Following Kiddush, where you wash your hand, fill the vessel with water, pour over the right hand, then left hand. Wipe dry, and you make the blessing. Okay, everybody familiar with that? Okay. Blessing on the two loaves of bread. Okay. Remember what we talked about? Dvar Torah was brought up. Benching. There's Bikat HaMazon. Kiddush Shabbos Day. Okay. So Dvar Torah, we mentioned saying the grace after meals, which you do after every time. It's not just Shabbos, but anytime you have an ounce of bread. Shabbos morning, of course, there's beginner service MG or downtown MG. Kiddush Day Shabbos. Okay. You start your Shabbos second meal over a wine or grape juice again. Two loaves of bread. Okay. Any questions about anything about the schedule or detail? Anything about Shabbos positive performances before we wrap this baby up? Yeah. Anything you want? Yeah,
number
question.
7 says we can nap.
Take a nap. I didn't say no nap. Oh, I'm not. No, by the way, you should know, by the way. The Ashkenazic position in the Shulchan Aruch says the acronym of Shabbat Shin Bet Tav stands for Shina Sleep BeShabbat Ta'anug is enjoyment. So part of the Onik Shabbos, according to that position, is Onik Shabbos. I don't think Maimonides agrees because it's not a positive state, but there's a place for sleeping. All I was just saying is that you don't want to sleep your Shabbos away. You don't want to have that mega 7-hour monster nap. First of all, you won't be able to fall asleep Saturday night. You'll be up to like 5, you know, and your whole, it'll be all messed up. But on top of it, you'll miss the Shabbos opportunity. Any question, Sean?
Should you avoid eating between like the first and second meal? Like,
you want to have an appetite.
It's like you should avoid having like breakfast before going on Shabbat morning.
Okay, so okay, all right. So the issue, okay, the issue if you're okay, the issue is you're going to be starving. You're be stuck into shul for hours upon hours before there's food. Most people, that's not really a. If you're starving, you can eat. If you're starving, you can eat. If you're not starving, you should avoid eating. Or just have coffee. You know, have beverage. Okay? Women could eat. It goes into all kinds. I don't go into the issues about... Because the issue is that generally you're eating before davening jump, because davening got to be a priority. If I'm having, if I'm going to get lost in the world of food, I may not end up davening. Okay, that's the concern there. All right. Any other questions about anything about the Shabbos meals?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I got stuck in the Friday night.
Yes. Yes.
If I don't have wine,
or then if you don't have wine, you go to wine or grape juice equal. Yeah. Then you can make it on the bread on the Lecha Mishnah.
No beer.
If I don't have no if okay. Because it's a priority list. The ideal is wine and the wine that you like.
Yes.
And or grape juice.
Yes.
If you like bread better, you can make the Kiddush on bread. Good. That's a choice for you.
Right.
But if you don't have wine, you can make it on beer. It's what they call chamar de bedina. It's second best.
But beer instead of bread?
No. You make the Kiddush over a glass of beer. You lift up the glass of beer and fill to the top. You make the change would be, you'd say, shakol
niyavivaro. Even if I have bread.
Yeah, then you're gonna wash. You're gonna have bread. In other words, you're gonna keep them separate. You're gonna make the kiddush over the glass of beer, which is the wine, which is viewed as just a step back, two steps. In other words, beer is defined as called the chamar de medina, the beverage of the country, America. We like our beer. So it's a beverage of distinction. You could not do it over water or grape juice. It has to be a significant beverage. So you make it over beer, okay? You make kiddush.
Instead of bread.
Right.
Wine, beer, bread.
So wine, beer, bread. Correct.
So if you're making it over bread, when do you
something
wash?
Dead.
That means it's just.
You wash first, then you have the bread, then you say kiddush, and then you make it.
Okay.
Okay. It's not,
if there's no kiddush.
Because I'm confused right now.
Okay.
If
you like bread better, you don't even, you could do make the kiddush with on the bread.
I mean, it's the same.
If you don't have, my understanding is if I don't have wine, I can use they call the wine substitute, which is beer, which is what they call chamar de bedina.
Friday night.
That's my understanding. Yes. I'll check it up.
I've done it.
What?
I've done it already.
Okay. Well, he wants to know if it's permitted.
Check it out here in the final roof. It says Chaman 72, Siman 72.
272. All right. Well, of course, let me check my handy dandy.
Because I don't have the notes right now.
Okay. Good. Let me check that out.
But if you're doing it on bread,
yes.
What's the order of washing and hamotzi?
You'd wash, make the bayichulu, hamotzi, and then you make the kiddush, and then you'd distribute the bread. Okay, good. Which siman did you say it was? 272?
Siman 272
al Hanan. Okay, we're good.
Even for Ashkenazi, my name Raman and
Maran
is the same.
Hold on, I love my phone. I got it, I'm with you, baby. Yeah. Number 9. But Makam Shein Yayim Matsui Yeshar Mirim Shmakashim al Sheikhar. On a place where there's no wine found, one position says you make it on beer, or sharmash, or other beverages except for water. Usually, Jay Makashim, the Rosh, al Sheikhar, el Apat. The Rosh says, so it's very good, it's a debate in the Shulchan Aruch. One position says you make it on beer, one says you go with the bread. 1 second, let's see what the final thing. Ashkenazim say you make it on bread. You're correct. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. So, unless you're Sephardic, you got to go with the bread. No wine, bread. That's it. Good. Sephardim, you can have the beer. Okay. Dan Riemann, last question of the night.
What items can you ask a non-Jew to do for you? What items can you not?
Okay, so Rabbi Weil can have a whole class on that. That is a class. That's a whole. Sometimes a question is a short answer. Sometimes a question is a class. And sometimes a question is a course. That's at least two classes. Very good. Any other questions about Kiddush, bread, Smiro, all the three davenings? Anything you want to know about these kind of things? Gad, Michael, you're on, baby.
So sometimes on Fridays we'll daven mincha.
Yes.
At work.
Yep.
When you do that at 12:45,
yeah.
And your congregation is doing mincha right before,
yeah.
Kabbalah Shabbat.
Yeah.
You just can repeat it, or
you don't repeat. No.
You just ignore it.
You come in after they finish the mincha. You chill out, or you come in the back there. You know. Look at the parsha a little earlier. It's an opportunity there. And you join them for the part. You've already said mincha. Once you've done mincha, you don't do it twice. You daven once, you don't do it again. All right? Any questions?
I have one.
Yeah, again, Yaniv.
I experienced a weird Shabbos where apparently they did washing first.
Yes.
And then the Kiddush.
Yes.
And then the challah. I wasn't sure if the guy was chayav after that, but I was curious to know.
Okay, so let me explain that. That actually is an ancient Ashkenaz custom followed by the Rosh, which is that they would do all things like this. They'd wash, follow me on this one. They'd make Kiddush, no speaking, drink the wine, then they make the motzi, slice of the challah, and distribute. And then there's no talk until you finish eating the bread. That is, you'll find in many Yekish communities, which are Jews that come from Germany, Western Europe, who followed the Rosh, which one of the great rabbis, which we just quoted, which says that he's the guy, the no beer guy, no beer but bread guy, same guy, the Rosh, one of the great deciders in the Middle Ages. So there's an Ashkenaz, but it's like literally German Jews will do that. You'll see.
Is that correct?
What?
Is that the right way to do it?
Correct. Yeah. You'd wash, make Kiddush, drink the wine, make the motzi, distribute the bread, eat the bread, then talk. That's Ashkenazim. Sephardim don't do that, but when you go to different people, you're going to see different customs. You're going to see different practices, you know? And most of them are all legitimate. There are communities that had slightly different variations on things. All right, guys. Any questions? That was great. It's fun.
Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Jonathan, what did you say?